The Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Movies, Films, and Flicks. I'm your host, John Lasova. Joining me today on this special Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast is my usual co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Game over, man.
What?
Hudson from Aliens.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton. That's
a quote.
It's been a long day for me. Also joining me on this special podcast is my shark dropper colleague, Robert Lamb. Say hi to everyone, Robert.
What's up, guys?
Well,
hold on.
What?
Get away from her, you bitch. There you go. Another quote.
So, guys.
Wait, John, you knew that one, right?
Yeah. Hopefully.
Like I said, it's been a long day. So, to the audience listening at home, they're warning, if they haven't figured it out by now, what film franchise are you guys quoting from right now?
Psycho.
Yeah, it was definitely Psycho.
I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah, that one too.
Leprechaun?
These quotes are commonly found in like a lot of movies.
Yeah, they are.
Tremors?
Yeah. No, actually, these quotes came from a classic sci-fi horror film franchise known as Alien? Yeah.
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 Sounds right.
Right.
In space, no one can hear you scream.
Right. So, Alien, guys. The Alien franchise, it's probably one of the most well-known film franchises, not just horror, but just in general in film history. Well, I guess, the goal of this podcast is just kind of delve into kind of what made the movies of this, long-running franchise great. And that's one of the reasons why I brought Robert on here, because he's a huge fan of the Alien franchise. Aren't you, Robert?
Yeah. I own the quadrilogy.
The quadrilogy?
On Blu-ray, yeah. Okay. I've seen the Alien films countless times, all four of them.
Really?
Yeah.
What about AVP?
Well, those. Okay. We'll get into that later.
Actually, Mark has seen AVP countless times.
And that's why I'm here, guys.
Yeah.
They brought me in as the resident AVP expert. They brought me into Langley, the CIA. They really want to know my knowledge about the AVP series.
There's not too many people who can be considered AVP experts.
See, that's what I do.
Or
I become an expert on really random things. Like, I haven't watched Tremors, but I've watched Tremors 3, 4, and 5.
Okay.
So, really?
So I'm like the king of knowledge that other people don't even want to watch.
You're also, it's not just movies, you're also a spork aficionado. You have the largest collection in the world, right?
I've traveled the world. I mean, I found some from Egypt. That's where it started.
I didn't know they had sporks in Egypt.
Yeah. No, I went on a journey there last year, discovered the first one.
Okay. Nice. All right, guys. Well, I'll have to segue from sporks to Alien. But
next week, though, you promised me if I did this, I'd get my spork podcast.
Yeah, I did.
Ooh, that. Sporks and film. Just name a couple of classics, guys.
Oh, what am I getting?
Tremor, actually, in Tremors 5, they kill one of the Tremors with a spork.
There you go.
What have I gotten myself into? All right, guys, let's get started with the first one that started it all. Alien, directed by Ridley Scott. Guys, what are your first thoughts on this, on the very first film in Alien? But don't all start at once.
I was being polite.
I'll say that Alien, the first one, is one of my favorite films. It's always been one of my favorite films since I saw it. Don't remember exactly when I saw it. Probably was 13, 14. It's funny. I actually saw Aliens first, which is the sequel. And then I went back and watched Alien, and for some reason, just the first one stuck with me more. I mean, I love Aliens also, but the first one, there's just something about it, the slow build, the not revealing the alien for almost like an hour into the film. But that doesn't matter, because you're kind of invested in like what's going on, and you're invested in the characters. And I think the cast in Alien is one of my favorite casts in like a film. Yeah.
Well, who were your favorite characters if you had to choose?
Parker, definitely. I like the Parker and Brett dynamic. Like, two friends, the maintenance guys. Yeah. Like, they're like cool guys, but they don't really, you can tell, like, they don't really get along with everybody else, especially like the higher officers and stuff that are on the ship with them. I like Dallas. Tom Skerritt plays Dallas. And, you know, when this movie came out, a lot of people saw Tom Skerritt as the lead character. But then, obviously, spoiler alert, he's not really the one that makes it out. It's somebody else. A little person known as Sigourney Weaver ends up kind of assuming the lead character role later on. But, like, Tom Skerritt was, like, the bigger name in this movie when it came out. So, I don't know. I like Dallas. I like his interactions with the crew. I like that he's, like, kind of... I don't know. He's a take-charge guy. I like when he goes to deal with the alien in the air vents, he's the one who goes in there alone, and he knows. And then, but you can see when he goes in there, at first, I'm going to take care of this. I'll do it. I'll do it myself. Just watch my back, check the monitors. But then he goes in there, and then he starts feeling like kind of, okay, this isn't working out. He starts getting scared, and you can kind of feel that with him. I feel like just all the characters, just how grimy the spaceship they're on and how they're like these blue collar workers is something you didn't see in sci-fi films too often. It was always kind of like neat. Like, you think of like 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is just this white collar kind of
gorgeous. Immaculate.
Yeah, just everything's white and pristine, and this is like the complete opposite.
Yeah, they brought in older technology for the ship. They wanted it to look like a lived-in ship. Like, they bought... It was like the equivalent of a 98 Corolla right now in 2015. They wanted to look lived-in. And the script that they wrote with all those characters, like, all those characters felt lived in. They all had backstories. They all, like, I don't know. And you're right, absolutely. I think what makes horror films work is you have to like the characters. And these guys were just a bunch of truckers in space that got dealt a bum hand, and they had to deal with this amazingly creative alien.
Yeah, I think you guys hit the nail on the head. These guys were... You know, they were definitely blue collar. They weren't like, you know, up until that point, like, you know, sci-fi movies, like, the characters were just kind of, they would always, like, speak in, like, you know, very futuristic lingo, or just, like, they were always, like, well-dressed, very clean. They were always well-mannered. You know, these guys and girl, you know, they were just, you could tell they were just, like, you know, steak and potatoes type of people. They were just like, you know, we gotta get this job done, you know, go home, and then like get ready for the next one.
And they're smoking, they're smoking cigarettes. They're not, yeah. I mean, it's like all old stuff. And I remember like watching these movies, especially like the first two, with friends of mine, and they're saying stuff like, you know, the future's not gonna look like this. There's not, look at these computer monitors. Everything would be touchscreen and stuff like that. But that's not what they were going for. They were going for a completely different aesthetic. They were going for kind of this old feel, and I think that's what makes it. That's what makes this. It's because Alien is essentially a haunted house in space. Like, you're trapped in this place. There's a monster after you, and like, what do you do?
So when you say haunted house, you're not referring to the Eddie Murphy movie that came out a couple years ago, right?
Although I will make a lot of similarities between the two. There's a lot of people didn't know that, but there's a lot of similarities between those two films.
Okay.
Well, you know what I love the most about it is there's so much mystery. Like, they go down on this place. There's a space jockey down there who is that big creature. He had a hole busted out of his chest. This guy gets this thing wrapped around his face. It explodes at a dinner table, and then this alien grows. I mean, there's an entire backstory around this creature that they never explain, and I think that's why the movie really caught the viewer's attention, because it didn't answer everything for you. It left a lot to the imagination.
Plus, it's interesting when when the shit goes down and the alien comes out of Kane and it runs out, they see it as this little creature. And it's one of those things where you're like, oh, why are they splitting up? Like, everybody always splits up in horror films. But the only time that they really split up is when Brett goes to get the cat, because he lets the cat loose or whatever when they capture in the net because they thought it was the alien, but it just turns out to be their cat. He goes to get the cat, and the whole time you're thinking, like, I mean, or their rationale is it's this tiny creature. Obviously, they don't know what it is, but it's a tiny creature that just burst out of John Hurt. But then when you see, like, the full length of the creature, and the characters know that this creature is huge, they see it carry Brett up into the air ducts or whatever, that's when they realize, like, oh, shit, this is something that it's going to be tough to deal with. They have no idea what they're really dealing with. So, like, that's when they decide, like, all right, no more splitting up. We're in together. But then even when they're together, when Lambert and Parker are together at the end getting, air canisters or whatever for to get off the ship, they're the ones who get attacked and not Sigourney Weaver, who's off on her own. Yeah. Like, it kind of breaks those kind of traditional scary movie molds. Yeah. Like, it's not following anything. It's definitely setting a precedent for movies that follow.
Speaking of the monster, I want to talk about the alien itself for a second. I just want to comment that the design for the creature, the xenomorph, is it's just one of the best designs for a movie monster in cinema history. There's nothing else like it in movies. And I think the reason why it's so effective is because it did a really good job of not making it look like something that came from Earth. Everything about the alien is that. It's so alien-like, from the head to the tail to the whole, like, kind of chest-bursting kind of aspect of it. It just all felt very weird and creepy. And that's what made it so scary. You didn't know what to expect from it. And that's
I mean, aside from the Tremors in Tremors 5, I think it has to be one of the best monster creations ever. And, like, Geiger, who created it, he was a surrealist. He had some crazy art designs. The studio had to fight for him. Ridley Scott had to fight for him to bring him in. It was a groundbreaking monster. I love that. I would hate to be stuck on a ship with that thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I think one of my worst nightmares is the, you know, be attacked by a facehugger.
Yeah.
That's got to be, like, the creepiest feeling in the world. Like, oh, my God.
Because that's the end.
Those things are the worst, too, man. Like, they're these strong little buggers that all they want to do is attach to your face and impregnate you with the monster that's going to kill a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture right now, and it looks like a cross between, like, a crab and an octopus. I don't know any other way to describe it.
I also want to point out that the fact that they use, like, real-life puppets and real-life costumes and stuff is what also makes the movie hold up so well. Right. I mean, that's like a real thing on John Hurt's face.
Yeah.
It's not CGI, which makes it look so much creepier.
So, oh, yeah, dude, the practical effects are timeless. I love that thing. Oh, my. Yeah, and that's why this can sound random, but remember on Return of the Jedi when that, what's the thing in the cave that eats a Gamorrean guard? What's the name of that thing? The Rancor.
Oh, Rancor.
Like,
yeah.
Those practical effects still hold up today.
Yeah.
And Alien is just, yeah. And what I liked about that alien is that it was almost indestructible with its acid blood. Like, whoever created that was a real jerk. It's like, all right, so we got this alien on our ship, but if we kill it, it's going to spew acid everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, exactly. And that was actually one of the biggest complaints that I've been reading about with aliens, was that in the first one, the alien was this nonstop killing machine, intelligent. And in Aliens, it was basically they just got wiped out by the dozen by these Marines by a few bullets. So that was, like, the one complaint that I've actually read about aliens, was that it kind of demystified how tough that alien actually was.
We should also mention that Aliens was directed by a different director.
Yeah.
A director who's also worth mentioning.
Is he famous?
Yeah. He makes movies every now and then. Doesn't make too many movies these
I
days.
Don't think I know anything else by
His
him.
His name is James Cameron.
Piranha 2, right? Piranha 2 directed.
Yeah, James Cameron directed the sequel to Alien. Now, at this point, was James Cameron, like, was he also, had he gotten a big name for himself yet?
Well, he was fresh off Terminator, so he had a lot of indie cred, and he made that movie really guerrilla style. And so that's why I think Aliens was so good, is because he had to fight for everything. He had worked with Roger Corman growing up. That was kind of his – he was the apprentice to him. And so Aliens had this very practical effect, focus on character, aesthetic that just made it the classic that it is.
That's another movie – or another movie in this franchise that actually took a while to get going. Like it's not – It wasn't forced. You can tell that he took his time with it. He took his time with the story and developing the characters, because, again, you don't see the alien right away. Like, you don't see the aliens in droves until much later into the film. And they're kind of building it up. I mean, they build it up until they go down into the radiator, underneath the radiator reactor or whatever. That's when they start seeing them. And like, it definitely builds up tension. Like, I think James Cameron and Ridley Scott know how to really just build up tension.
And you know what? You had a great point when you were talking about the characters. With Alien, you named all the characters specifically.
Yeah.
And then when you think about Aliens, you got Ripley, you got Hudson, you have Newt.
Hicks.
You can remember the Hicks. You can remember the characters' names. But if you think about later installments, I don't remember any of their names.
Yeah, me
either. And I think that's what – yeah, exactly. Like Bro is maybe one of the names from AVPR. I don't remember any of them.
I know some of the actors that were in it, but I don't know their character names at all.
What's yeah, exactly. Time? So these films stress character, and I think that's key to all horror action films.
Now, guys, you know, obviously, you had a change in directors. What do you think was James Cameron's kind of influence or kind of stamp on the Aliens franchise? Like, what would you say that was? Like, if you had to pick one thing or things.
It's hard to say. I mean, Ridley Scott definitely established what the Alien is, but obviously when James Cameron came in, you can tell he didn't want to make just like your average sequel. Like he and to bring Sigourney Weaver back into the whole thing, I think James Cameron's, because he wrote the script with, was it one other person or something? Like, I can't remember. I know he had his hand in the script or whatever, and I believe they filmed it in the UK. I'm not sure though. I can't really remember. I'm pretty sure. But anyways, James Cameron, like, to get, like, I remember one of the things was, how do we get Sigourney Weaver back to this planet? Like, what's a realistic approach to get her back to the planet and stuff? And I think the way he works it, it actually works out really well. Like, getting her back in there, going with Marines, and you kind of, you know that these aliens, because you saw them in the first one, like, yeah, they're going to be difficult to deal with, even if you have guns. And Ripley's the only one who realizes that. Ripley and then the audience watching the movie. Like, they're the only ones who realize it's not going to be just a walk in the park. And when you get there, James Cameron also brings to life, like, kind of gives Ripley more of a backstory in the sense of her daughter. And then he ties in this relationship with Newt, which is this girl that they find on the planet. And I think that that dynamic, just like turning her into like this mother figure to this young girl after this young girl's lost her mother and Ripley's lost her daughter, I think that just ties them together so well. And it makes like that final climactic battle scene just that much better.
Yeah. And I think Cameron did a very good job of expanding the world without going too big. Like, most sequels just go bigger. They lose characters. They repeat everything. But like you said, the sequel came 7 years later and he just built a different world to expand upon with these creatures. And I love that about it. And you know what? And it made it a bigger world, but still left a lot of questions.
That's the thing, is they didn't force it out. It came out 7 years later. This was something James Cameron wanted to work on.
Yeah.
And that's sequels nowadays, like, if they're going to make a sequel, they know, like, all right, we need to get the sequel out. I mean, it's not like the Saw franchise where they're going to release one every year.
Yeah, movie stars these days, they sign like multi-picture contracts. Like, you know, like Orlando Bloom signed like a 3-picture contract for the Pirates movies. You know, they know, like, you know, ahead, like, oh, there's going to be more movies. When, like you said, the sequel for Alien came out like 7 years later.
No, yeah, 86, I think, right? 86.
Yeah, no one knew this was coming. As far as James Cameron goes, I think Alien was right in his wheelhouse. It's sci-fi. You have like a strong female lead. You know, you have like lots of setups for great action set pieces. And
the set pieces are great.
Yeah.
There's like, you can count them on your hand. Oh, dude, those guns? Yeah.
Oh my gosh. The guns that are what? They're the motion detecting guns. And then the beeping, 40 yards, 30 yards. Oh, my gosh. Dude, my young brain almost exploded watching that scene.
I probably shouldn't admit this on here, but I will. Still to this day, when I watch that movie, it almost brings a tear to my eye when they get caught down below that reactor system and they're all just dying down there. It's so sad. It's just so sad. They're all just trying to get out of there. They're yelling each other's names. And then they want to go back after they get out of there. It's intense. That's an intense battle scene.
And you know what makes it good is you like the people involved. They're not really going there for selfish reasons. And I hate that in horror films when people are there for selfish reasons and then someone's a jerk. These are some good people that are in a lot of trouble. They're loyal to each other. They're good Marines. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's, I think, also James Cameron. I mean, he built up, and you can see this in other movies, is he kind of builds these relationships with these other characters, especially like the Marines. You have their camaraderie and everything, but each Marine has like their own little nuances, like their own little things that they're doing, their own little cliques in the group. And I think he brings that to life with like minimal dialogue too. Like he doesn't just spend a lot of time on each Marine. He just gives them a little focus here and there and kind of builds it up. And then when they start dying off one by one, you kind of feel for the characters.
Right.
Yeah, what's that scene? I forget who says it, but she was like, "You always were an asshole." And then the two blow up when the aliens come at them. Like
Gorman.
That one line explains their backstory.
Yeah, because she was pissed. Yeah, she was pissed about him not pulling the Marines out because he was a new guy. He was a new lieutenant. What was he? Lieutenant or something. Yeah. He was like a new lieutenant.
Oh, Vasquez, yeah.
Yeah, so Vasquez was kind of like upset that, like, you know, her friend died in there because he was such a newbie and didn't pull out his team when they should have. So Sigourney Weaver had to take over, and she's the one who helped everybody get out of there when the aliens were attacking. So Vasquez just had it out for Gorman this whole time. And
you know,
and
that's what I love. We're sitting here, we're talking about Vasquez, Gorman, Ripley, Private Hudson. Like, we're actually talking about the character names, which I think is rare nowadays in film. And I think that's something Cameron definitely excels at.
All right. I just before we move on to the next movie, I just want to say,
wait, we're moving on?
Yeah, yeah. Listen, we gotta keep the train going here. But before we go, before we leave,
the alien train?
Yeah, I just want to say that I actually, like Robert mentioned, I actually saw Aliens before I saw Alien.
Yeah,
me too. It wasn't until years. I think I saw Alien 2, 3, and 4 before I saw first Alien.
Really?
Yeah, and I was actually really just going by, like, because I love Alien 2, and just going by that, like, I did not, you know, watching the original movie, I was genuinely surprised by just kind of the subtle and low key tone of it. It was just,
it's slower. Yeah. I think they say you don't see the actual alien burst out of John Hurt's chest until 56 minutes into the movie.
You know, I was just telling Mark for the podcast, like, I've always known about that chest bursting scene. Mm. You know, way before I saw the movie, because it's a classic scene.
Right.
Spaceballs? Did you watch Spaceballs first?
John Hurt's Not Again.
No, I actually
Hello, my honey.
Spaceballs before I saw Star Wars, too. But that's a different podcast. But yeah.
Wait, John Hurt was in Spaceballs?
Yeah, that was actually him again. That was him getting the alien. That's why he's like, not again.
But that chest bursting scene, when I saw that, like, just like, I definitely felt like, man, if I did not know that was coming, I would have jumped out of my seat.
Yeah.
Like,
I think I've heard a piece of trivia that the actors really didn't know what was supposed to happen in that scene. They just knew that, like, they're supposed to be like an alien or something. But when it actually burst out, that's like real fear, because Veronica Cartwright, who plays Lambert, she gets like blood actually splattered on her face, and that's like a real reaction of her like screaming as like the blood hits her, like the fake blood. So like, I thought that was pretty awesome.
And that's like, dude, these movies are full of like, I'm jumping ahead, we'll go back, but what, Alien Resurrection, you talked about her basketball shot.
Oh yeah.
Well, we won't give that up yet.
Let's go to the next stop on this magical journey.
I just want to say that we started off really strong, or the movie started off really strong, and to me, this is a little heartbreaking at this point. But
okay,
go ahead.
This is where the studio interference really starts.
Yeah,
this is where it kind of all changes. There's a lot more cooks in the kitchen after Aliens, And that's really evident with the next two films, for sure. But Alien 3, no matter its faults, it has one of my favorite scenes in all the Alien films.
What is that?
When that guy's – they're in the – I don't know where they're at, but they're in that boardroom, and they're having that big meeting.
Oh, and the alien
grabs the alien hand comes down, grabs the dude by the head, and pulls him through the ceiling. Yeah. That scene – I was – I don't know when it came out, but – I was legit blown away by that scene. I love that moment.
Well, now, guys, we should also mention, because we've been talking about the directors.
Right.
They have been a huge influence. First one was by Ridley Scott. Aliens was by James Cameron. Alien 3 was directed by David Fincher.
Which is one of my favorite directors.
Yeah.
Sadly, this is not one of my favorite movies by him.
No, wait, random aside, I think Zodiac is really underappreciated.
Oh, Zodiac is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, I love Zodiac. I've only seen it once, and I don't care to see it again.
Oh, I've seen that movie. It's a long-ass movie, and I've seen that movie at least 10 times now.
You've seen Zodiac 10 times?
Yeah, it's a great film to just watch, like, the subtleness of each of the characters and stuff. It's great. It's a great film.
All right. How about a month from now, we get together and talk Zodiac and Panic Room and Fincher's not little known, but lesser known films.
Yeah, actually, there's a I forget what website it is, but they nominate films like the 500 greatest films of all time, and they're constantly like adding new films to it. And Zodiac was one of the films that they nominated for 500 greatest films of all time.
Who has the time to watch that movie 10 times,
dude?
Apparently, you.
I do. This was a while back when I didn't work two jobs.
10 times, huh? What serious movies have I watched 10 times?
Well, I mean, I've seen
Fast and Furious 6, probably.
I've seen Idle Hands like probably at least 20 times.
Really, Idle Hands? You're making fun of me for freaking Zodiac,
dude. Jessica Alba. Anyway, we're digressing.
Aliens 3.
Alien 3. Someone say something about Alien 3 right now.
All right, yeah, it's directed by David Fincher, but. Like we mentioned, it was definitely studios got involved, and I know David Fincher had a hell of a time directing this,
he made this movie before he kind of took hit off. It big, right?
And I love this movie, it was kind of a big. This is gonna sound bad, but it was a big F you to everybody because in opening minutes they kill Newt, they kill
that
Hudson,
sucked, though.
They kill Michael Biehn, and then after this huge rah rah. Get away from her, you bitch. Oscar-nominated hero performance by Sigourney Weaver. They shave Sigourney Weaver's head. They put her in a prison full of murderers and kidnappers and racists. And then they make this incredibly bleak film. It's like a complete... So people were probably going in there just going like, Ridley Scott is gonna Apollo Creed an alien. It's going to be incredibly exciting. And then we got this weird half-finished... prison film full of religious context, and the original script for it was she landed on this planet that was full of woods and she meets some monks and she's the only female and an alien kills them all. It's like the weirdest mainstream film after these two amazing blockbusters, so that's why it kind of intrigues me.
See, my problem with it is the fact that Sigourney Weaver talks about like when they were doing this film they wanted to kind of recapture the magic of the first one, which I don't understand, because Aliens was a great movie too. I'm not saying, but I love Alien, but like why was there a necessity to go back to
you Alien? Can't recapture that magic,
right.
Man,
but they were trying to, and that's why they got rid of all the side supporting cast right in the beginning, give her her own thing, put her on this planet, and then there's only one alien. I mean, that's what they were trying to capture, was that first Alien film again. And I just don't think it worked. It didn't turn out how it should have. I don't think they should have gotten rid of the supporting cast. They could have done so much, had so much dynamic between all these characters, between Bishop and Michael Biehn's character and Newt. I don't know why they got rid of them right away.
This is what I found out today, is you originally think that the facehugger gets on a dog, mm-hmm. but in the extended cut, it got on a cow or an ox.
Oh, and yeah, so- I heard about that.
Yeah, so the extended cut features the alien busting out of a cow, but then the theatrical cut shows it jumping out of a dog.
That's interesting. That's
I kind of like that the alien takes on the personality of its host.
And I didn't understand that for a long time after I saw that movie. I didn't realize why it was kind of always on all fours and stuff. And then I like crawling. It was always crawling. And then whenever it got to somebody, it looked like it was just like using them as a chew toy.
Oh,
and that makes sense now.
Whoa, you just blew my mind. I never really thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that scene where that really bad CGI alien grabs the guy and pulls him into the tunnel. Wait, I just had a thought, guys. If I knew that aliens were attacking the planet, and let's say they were located in Seattle, what I would do was I would ship all the three-toed sloths to Seattle, and I would make sure that the alien scum attach the face huggers onto the sloths and form the weirdest alien imaginable. Imagine an army of three-toed sloth aliens.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to worry about them for months.
I don't know. Like,
as Mitch Hedberg said, it'd be the cutest infestation ever.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, like, sloths still have like those really sharp claws. Like, I wouldn't want to mess with like an angry.
Yeah, but you can walk away from them.
Yeah, but if we're in horror movie land, I guess we would trip on everything known to man, and they would catch up to us eventually.
Yeah.
I just wonder, like, yeah, they take the form of whatever they infest or whatever. But
I would go like the cutest thing ever, like a bunny. I would no.
No, then they'll mate.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
Just like reproduce. Okay, never mind. Hey guys, John here from Movies, Films, and Flicks, here to tell you about a special offer from Audible. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. With over 150,000 titles to choose from, it can be a little daunting to figure out which book to listen to. So might I suggest The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien? You might have heard this book recently. There might be a movie about it, but why would you want to watch a movie when you can listen to the book? It's the same thing. It's just not as flashy or as bright or doesn't require a trip to the movie theater. Anyway, to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/shark. Again, that's audibletrial.com/shark for your free audiobook.
All right, so what's your worst nightmare of an alien? I think if an alien, a facehugger got a hold of an anaconda, I would... Man.
Anacondas don't want none. Sorry.
I mean, imagine that, an alien anaconda with big buns.
Yeah. That'd be pretty... It'd just be a really long alien.
Yeah.
That could wrap around you.
Or like if like a facehugger got a hold of like Melissa McCarthy.
No, you know, going back to Alien 3, like it's just... You know what I love about the Alien series is that these aliens so far are just complete jerks. Like, there's no way to escape them. They get put in these situations where they're stuck in a spaceship with them. They're on a planet surrounded. Then they're in a desolate planet, prison planet, with a cow alien. Like, there's no hope for these people. Ugh.
Yeah. If it was a cow alien, wouldn't it give milk or something?
Ooh,
why was it running so fast? The dog thing, I think, makes more sense.
It's a good thing I'm lactose intolerant.
That's true. Oh, yeah, I don't know. Like with Alien 3, because they try to recapture. It's not even that. There was like so many prisoners in Alien 3 that like every time somebody died, it was kind of like, I don't even know who that was. There's only a few people that I knew. And one of them was Pete Posworth or whatever. And that's only because I knew the actor because he was in Lost World and Inception. Like, I just knew him as, like, a bigger actor. So he had, like, the small kind of supporting role. And then, obviously, who was it? Charles S. Dutton? Was he the other guy? Yeah. So, like, you knew a couple of the characters, but most of the time it was just these prisoners that were just random dying.
I mean, we know the quality already because we know none of the characters' names.
Right.
Like the guy that got awesomely pulled through the ceiling, his name was probably Steve.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Was he like the leader? He was like the leader or something, right?
Yeah. And he was making a speech like Samuel Jackson in Deep Blue Sea.
That's true. Well, that was the thing. Like, that one part when that does happen, you're thinking like she sees the alien and it's right when that one guy that I don't know if she really liked him or whatever, that other guy with like the bigger nose and.
Yeah. Oh, wait, Tywin Lannister, right? Charles Dance?
Oh, that's who it was?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, he, I remember, like, when he dies, she gets up. Like, the alien doesn't attack her, obviously, because she has an alien inside her. But she gets up, and she runs into that cafeteria where that guy's making the speech. And she says, like, it's here. And no one, like, I thought they were going to go with that a little bit. Like, kind of, like, what's she talking about? And then find out that this guy's dead and then think maybe she did it. But it just, nope. Alien just comes down, grabs that guy, pulls him up. And then everyone's like, oh, yeah, she's right. There's, like, no suspense there. It's just like, yeah, she's okay. There's a thing here. Okay.
And speaking of that, like, the alien knows that she has an alien in her, I guess, kind of like zombies. But do aliens communicate? I know when the queen's in trouble.
Yeah, they text each other.
They're on Facebook.
Yeah.
But they seem to know when the queen's in trouble. I wonder if there's a communication between them.
I think they do.
When did the queen first show up?
The second one.
Okay.
And then she had – Ripley, had a queen in her belly.
Yeah, in the third one, yeah.
Have they ever explained, like, where the aliens come from at all?
They
like,
did in Prometheus, kind of.
Okay. Well, we may or may not talk about that later.
Okay. No, like, yeah, I guess they kind of do. Because remember in the Alien Resurrection, the fourth one, there's those three aliens in the cell. And then they kill the other alien. And then the alien's acid eats through the floor and they escape.
Hey, speaking of Alien Resurrection,
let's
move on to the Alien Resurrection.
Hey, who directed this, John?
I don't know.
The guy who directed City of Lost Children.
Oh. What's his name? Jacques something? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I knew his name earlier, but I can't think of it now. But the only thing I remember from Alien Resurrection, there's three things. They're in water. I remember.
Ooh, yeah.
Ripley cuddling with a really weird looking alien, just straight up cuddling. He's licking her face. Mm-hmm. And then the basketball scene when she has her greased back hair and she nails that shot.
Oh, just quick trivia. That was a real shot that she made.
Yeah, when she's walking away and she shoots behind her.
Yeah, I think that was you see Ron Perlman's reaction.
Yeah,
that was a genuine reaction. It's like, whoa.
That's another thing. It's Ron Perlman's in this movie. Winona Ryder, Leland Orser. I'm trying to think who else. Oh,
do you guys know any of their characters' names? No. I know Ripley.
Nope.
Wait, Winona Ryder's character. I knew her name. It was like Dashboard or something.
Dashboard. Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh wow, that's a great name for a character.
I don't remember. I would know it if somebody said it, but yeah, that's another thing is none of the characters were really that special. I mean, they were unique in just kind of their personalities, but I think that was just like kind of how the characters were already. Like Ron Perlman's just a unique looking guy, and like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, he brings his gruff manner to the film, but it wasn't anything totally outrageous or totally.
I just remember the cuddle session. That's all I really remember.
That's where, like, yeah, this one just kind of went off the rails there. Like, the alien gives birth like a human, the queen alien. Because they essentially clone Ripley a bunch of times until they get her right. Then they can extract the queen alien out of her. And then that's when it, like, gives birth like a human, kind of. And then that's when you get the human alien.
It was very weird. I didn't want to follow the story anymore at that point. I'm just
All I remember is I also know that Sigourney Weaver came back for $11 million.
Damn.
It's hard to say no to that.
Yeah.
And that Joss Whedon wrote the script.
Really?
But he hates that movie. Like, all the interviews, he's like, I hate it. He's like, I wanted to cast this really creepy guy, and they cast Brad Dourif. You look at him, he's creepy. He has nothing but terror. He hates it. And I guess the crew he wrote, they were the early inspiration for the film Firefly, like a motley crew of mercenaries.
Yeah, wow. I can definitely see that.
Right. And so his fingerprints are on it, but they're all washed away by... Oh, and this is another wash. Speaking of wash away, if you watch all the Alien films, Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, AVP, AVP Resurrection, the aliens secrete more and more juices every film. They become gooier and gooier through every film.
I think their cholesterol intake just goes up with each
There's
movie.
Something. There's something there.
I don't know.
But like, no, seriously, I don't remember what happens in this movie. I know Ripley's a clone. I know she had other clones.
Dude, I remember this because, like, I remember the time when she, like, she burned all the other clones because she was just, like, upset. I know Ripley had acid blood.
There can be only one.
Well, Ripley had acid blood. Remember that?
Yeah.
She had acid blood. And then, because she was kind of part with the alien. And then, what was the other thing? The aliens had acid spit. Like, they could just hawk a loogie. and spit on people. They did it to that one reggae looking guy, and he fell into the water.
That would be the worst. You think you're away from an alien, and it just goes.
Yeah, that's what it did.
What?
But why wouldn't they do that more often? Why did they only do it one time, and they're like, nah. I'd rather catch these guys.
It's like R2-D2 with like the
rocket
pack.
Booster. Yeah,
yeah. It's like, how come you never did that like in the other movies?
So like Sigourney Weaver's like, listen, I've fought with these guys for thousands of years. They do not spit acid. Okay, we trust you. And then all of a sudden,
yeah, yep, you're wrong. I will say though, I do like the underwater scene. That's my favorite part of this movie. It's just the underwater kind of chase thing because it was unique, and I'm glad that they added something like that to it. But everything else, if you know, the movie. Overall, wasn't that great. So that was the one standout part for me.
Speaking of Sigourney Weaver, I want to talk about kind of her character Ripley's kind of arc throughout the whole franchise. If you had to describe like her character arc very succinctly, because we're running out of time here,
right.
How would you describe it?
Well, she goes from protector of her crew to protector of a child to protector of her child, which is the alien, to a Highlander.
Yeah. she ultimately kills that one alien that she kind of has a connection with that licks her face like a dog, and she just like blasts it out the window by using her blood acid,
yeah.
Which is just, this movie really just went, it's just went too crazy, I think.
I think, you know, Sigourney Weaver, like her perform, even like in the later movies, which, you know, weren't as great as the earlier ones, It should be said that, you know, whenever I watch these movies and I, you know, watch Sigourney Weaver, I don't think like, oh, here's like a female like playing like a tough guy role. I just think of like her, Sigourney Weaver, as a badass, you know.
Well, that's what James Cameron is so good at, and I think he established that in Aliens. He makes these like Jamie Lee Curtis, Linda Hamilton. He makes these female characters that are tough, but they're not like acting tough. They are tough women. They are believable, strong women. And yeah. I think that's why the series survived so long, is everyone loves Sigourney Weaver's roles. I think no matter what you say about the movies, you're like, Sigourney Weaver was good.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is like the third and fourth one weren't that great, but you can kind of see Sigourney Weaver still kind of having fun with the role. Yeah. Like she's having fun with the role, but I mean, the movies may not be that great, but at least, you know, she's making money and she's doing the one role that kind of made her.
Right.
So I want the hot tub time machine, right, to go back to Alien and find Ripley and be like, listen, in the next film, you're going to join some Marines. You're going to fight a queen alien. You're going to get impregnated. You're going to go to a prison. You're going to breed a queen baby alien. You're going to kill yourself in lava. Then you're going to come back as a clone who can shoot sweet basketball hoops and cuddle with aliens. Don't do it.
Yeah. Just kill yourself now.
Is that the plot for Hot Tub Time Machine 2?
Yeah.
I wish.
I know they are making a sequel to that. Well, I digress. Yeah. So I now, just it should be
well,
mentioned.
We know that the greatest nemesis to the alien is Ripley. However, a few years later, the alien met a greater nemesis.
Who is
and
that?
That was the Predator.
Ugh. Predator from another film franchise. Now, were these who? Where did an idea of
started a video game? Oh no, right? Predator 2. When Danny Glover was fighting the Predator, there was an alien skull on the ship.
Oh yeah,
and then that started comic books and video games.
It originated in comic books, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And guys, I just want you to sit down. I want to tell you guys a little story.
Okay.
All right. So 3,000 years ago, predators came to Earth. They were gods. They convinced people in Antarctica, which wasn't Antarctica yet, to build them massive pyramids, because we all know the first pyramids were in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm. Obviously.
And their goal was, they were gods. What they would do is they would take the few chosen lucky, they would put face huggers on them, and then those people would, you know, fart out aliens. Not technically.
Yeah.
And then those predators who still have the technology 3,000 years earlier as they do today would kill those aliens as a rite of passage. However, one day the alien virus spread and about 1 million people somehow got aliens on their face huggers on their faces, and they shot aliens. and they made a run at the predators atop their massive pyramids. One of the predators let off a nuclear bomb, which then caused Antarctica to be a barren wasteland of cold.
So are you reading this straight from a history book, or is this just a movie plot? I'm not sure what's going on here.
Wait, you didn't learn this in elementary school?
No, I think I missed this chapter.
Yeah, no.
I wish I went to that school.
This is what happened. And yeah. So, of course, the first time, you know, Alien vs. Predator is a PG-13 debacle. But I love it. Back in college, my buddy and I at Florida State, we would watch it. And there's a scene in the film where Lance Henderson stages the worst attack in film history. But we'll get there. But I just love this movie because you guys know. Have you guys seen Love and Basketball from Sanaa Lathan? Sanaa Lathan's in it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a classic film. And like one of her follow-ups to that film was AVP. And we first meet her. She's climbing up this ice peak, right? And she gets this call on her Bluetooth, their service. And she almost falls off. And this guy's like, hey, we need you. She climbs up 3 feet and there's a helicopter waiting for her. So, I mean, how long was this helicopter there? Yeah. Why did they have to call her? Couldn't they wait till she got to the top of the mountain? So, like, they didn't have to risk calling her, so she fell off.
Nah.
And then they gather a team of dudes and bros. I don't know any of their names. And they bring Sanaa Lathan in because she's the foremost ice traveler person. And they go to Antarctica to hunt down a heat signature.
Yeah, man, you're bringing back memories of watching this movie and just being.
I saw this movie one time in the theater.
You didn't watch it 10 times.
Extremely disappointed.
You didn't watch it 10 times.
This is not like Zodiac to me.
But wait, guys, 3,000 years ago, the Predators built a conveyor belt, and they put a queen alien on ice. That queen alien somehow survived that attack. This queen alien, because of the heat signature, awakens again and starts pooping out eggs, right?
Yeah.
But our intrepid explorers they make their way down to the pyramids. They fiddle with a bunch of knobs and they get inside, and then those facehuggers attach themselves to the people and aliens pop out. And then predators come down to Earth and battle them really unstrategically. And it all ends with the greatest attack ever. In history, there's a scene where the Predator comes after Lance Henderson, reprising his role as Bishop. And the Predator grabs Lance Henderson, looks in his guts with his infrared vision, sees that he's dying of cancer, I believe, and lets him down. Lance Henderson turns around and goes, "Don't Oh my gosh, the Predator walks away from him. Lance Henderson goes, "Don't turn your back on me." And he lights the Predator on fire. But the fire is just basically a little bit of annoyance for the Predator, who turns around and kills Lance Henriksen. And that's like my favorite scene of the AVP series, bar none.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I don't remember too much from these films, especially like the first one. I know that it's directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, not to be confused with Thomas Anderson.
Please do.
Although he would probably like that, or hey, he should
are
like
you telling
that.
Me the guy that directed Boogie Nights did AVP?
Yeah, pretty much.
Both.
Yeah, and The Master. But I remember watching this film and being extremely let down. And it's the same things we kind of talked about with the other Alien movies, like Resurrection and 3, is you don't know any of the characters. All the characters that like seem like they might have a personality die way too fast. They try to make Sanaa Lathan, whatever her name is, Sanaa Lathan. Yep. They try to make her kind of a Ripley character, and it just didn't work out. They played to a lot of the same horror tropes that so many horror movies do. Like, what's that noise? Oh, it's just a penguin behind a shed. No, wait, there's a predator. It killed me. Like that kind of stuff. It's just like the whole jump scare kind of tactics. The only thing it had going for them, like for that film, was the whole predator and alien fight scenes. And there were some decent ones, but overall, like, I don't know. I mean, they just didn't hold up as well as, like, you know, they should have.
I thought both movies were fun to watch. It's just, it didn't live up to either film franchise.
Well, like, the fight scenes, they didn't hold a shot for longer than 3 scenes. It's just a bunch of cuts.
Right. The first, the initial, I think the first one is, like, the probably the best one, and that's just where like the alien ends up killing like two predators or something like that, which was really weird. And then like the predator, the other predator becomes like more like a main character, more of a main character than Sidney Lathan, which is really weird. And I think with movies like that, you can't make a monster really like a main character. You have to have that human dynamic that like kind of ties you into the whole ordeal, that kind of brings you into the movie and makes you part of that character that you're watching and makes you root for them. There's really nobody to root for in this movie.
So the question is,
you didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what's funny? I think the more fascinating thing is you brought up penguins. I started thinking about a penguin alien.
Yeah. Why weren't they
just flopping on the ice?
I want Morgan Freeman to do a documentary about that.
March of the aliens. Alien
But like, no, it was PG-13. It was rushed. They filmed it overseas to make it cheaper. There was no characterization. The predators and them didn't fight till 45 minutes in. I don't even know why you would put it on Earth, because you know that they're not going to take over the world because the future sequels happen. Why not put it in space with...
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean,
anybody
all the
else.
Other, all
and
the
that
other
way you can build more of a story as opposed to, you know, you're hindered by that.
I will say that I was rooting for the aliens the whole time, though. I was team alien.
Okay.
And like, you know what? And like,
no, I was team predator. Makes,
and like the aliens, they freed the queen alien by bleeding on her
chains.
But like, I feel like they would have figured that out 3,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know. The movie was just pure garbage. But for some reason, my buddy and I, who were drinking a lot of Crown Royal at the time, really loved it.
All right, guys. Since we're running out of time here, we should also mention... I don't know if I should, but I guess...
Yes.
Like, yeah, okay. Okay. There's another entry in the Alien franchise worth talking about. Mark, do you want to...
Are we talking about AVP?
Yeah,
AVP. So at the end of AVP... one of the predators gets a facehugger on his face, and he gets an alien in his chest. The biggest problem with this, though, is at the end of AVP, the predator gets stabbed through the chest by probably a 2-foot-wide spike of a queen alien. They take that predator, they put him on a ship, and then that same predator who just got a massive spike through his chest has a alien predator hybrid burst out of its chest. Then the plane, which is going to outer space, makes a U-turn, crashes in the woods, and then we are introduced to a bunch of teenagers, and violence ensues. And then there's an alien, I don't know, I never watched that show, Ray Donovan, but I heard it's about a guy that fixes things. So, like, the Predator Ray Donovan hears about the message. He's at the Predator homeland. He flies to Earth, and the rest of the movie is just one Predator battling an incredibly jerky alien.
Yeah, it's like I don't know. This movie was just
Pred-Alien, right?
Pred-Alien.
Yeah, Pred-Alien.
But like the facehugger gets on somebody's face, it dies immediately. Then the person bursts out, and then we have an 8-foot-tall alien in a matter of an hour.
Yeah, they never established that as like a thing in the older ones. Right. So it always took a while.
And like in this movie, a pregnant lady gets infested with a bunch of alien babies. So a pregnant woman gets about 8 alien babies in her stomach.
Ouch.
And then they burst out of her. Ouch.
That's gotta hurt.
Wow.
And I mean, the movie, I don't know any of the characters' names. There's aliens who are just jerks. This one alien is harassing this little girl. And then the fixer predator just kind of puts goo on a bunch of aliens and makes everything disappear.
You know,
then they blow up the entire town and the whole movie's over.
I've always wondered what Ridley Scott's opinion was of
probably didn't even see him.
The later Alien sequels, especially AVP. AVP.
Well, you know, that movie actually inspired him to write and direct Kingdom of Heaven.
Really?
No.
Okay. Oh, I was about to say.
I was kind of hoping, I wanted to just hear like what could have been a tie-in for those two films.
These movies were just so ill-conceived. Like they wanted to make it R, so they were like, let's make a bunch of gross things, but let's not care about characters. And it was just
But that's fine. Really, that's fine if you're trying to make like kind of a B movie, but this didn't even work as a B movie. It didn't even work as like a fun kind of just dumb horror movie.
It didn't work on any level.
It's something you felt like you had to watch if you were a fan of Alien and or Predator.
Right.
So, since we're really running out of time, but I really want to bring it up anyway, speaking of Ridley Scott, you know, He also came back with the came back to Alien with Prometheus.
And like now, let me ask you guys a question. When was like so? I'm going to tell you a story, then I'll ask you a question. My wife and I went and watched Prometheus, and then we went to On the Border and had two massive margaritas with Grand Marnier floaters and talked about Prometheus for about an hour and a half.
Was that just because of about, the movie, or was that because of the alcohol?
We talked about the movie. Like, those creatures, like, they started Earth, and then they wanted to come back to destroy it, so we tried to figure out the timeline, then we tried to figure out why that worked into the movie, then we tried to figure out why two incredibly trained scientists would put their faces in front of a snake-looking thing, and why Charlize Theron only runs in a straight line. And then, I don't know, but you know what, though? Like, the movie has, and especially on our site, co-writer John, he's written about four posts about this. It's a movie that got a lot of people talking, and I'm not going to say it's a good film, but it looked beautiful and it engaged a lot of discussion, which I think in today's day and age, it was successful on that level.
Real quick, what was the connection for Prometheus to to Alien? Like,
it was a prequel of sorts. I mean, it kind of explained who the space jockey was in Alien, because you never get a sense of who the space jockey was with that initial alien burst that Captain Dallas and Lambert and them found, and then when they found the ship with all the eggs, you never knew where that came from. And Prometheus is kind of this movie that wants to explain where all this came from without really showing alien type aliens. They show aliens, but they don't show like the xenomorphs that were so you know, like that we know from the Alien franchise. So they do it in a different way, and I think Ridley Scott wanted to do this movie in the sense that he didn't want to revisit the Alien per se. He wanted to revisit that franchise, but not really like zone in on the xenomorph. He didn't really want to show that. I think they show it at the very end, but that was pretty much it.
I mean, he succeeded in creating a beautiful film, but who wrote it? The guys Damon who wrote Lindelof. Lost wrote it.
Yeah.
And so you're never going to know what's going on.
Right.
I do like, though, that that guy, the creator, ripped off Fassbender's head, kind of like Jason punched off a head in Jason Goes to Manhattan. Is that the name of it?
No, wasn't that Jason Goes to Hell?
Or not? He goes to New York.
Hell was 9, right? Jason Goes to Hell was part 9.
There were 9 movies?
Yeah, because
all I know, is Jason punched a head off.
Yeah.
All right, guys. It's actually around that time where we have to sign off. I'm sorry if I cut you off there, Mark. But
well, we're just going to have to do it all again next week.
I know. All right. Plugs. Mark, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, our website. The past few weeks I've been spelling it wrong, so here is the correct spelling. It is www.moviesfilmsandflix.com, movies, films, and flicks.com.
Yeah, don't forget the
and
end.
We are excited to be working with Shark Dropper. We predict many insightful, knowledgeable. We're going to be making people cry for years to come with our observations about Anaconda.
And when we say cry, so it's not always tears of joy.
But yeah, no. And I got a review up tomorrow about Dead Snow 2, which I thought was a lot of fun. It's going to be on Netflix pretty soon. And then I also figured out how a Jason Statham movie will be good, judging by the movie poster.
Yeah.
Nice.
So read.
Robert, anything you want to plug?
I'll just plug Shark Dropper. Go to sharkdropper.com. You can check out all the different podcasts. This is obviously one of them. But you can check out our other podcast, Horror Play, where we search for the scariest game ever made. Word of the Bay is a sports podcast. We have Doppel Avenue Hurt, which is a fictional film noir podcast. And then the Shark Dropper podcast, where me, John here, the host, and our friend Kyle get together and we just talk about random stuff.
I want to plug On the Border, because apparently they have a really bitch margarita
that makes you happy to talk about Prometheus.
And listen, when you schmooze up the bartenders, they give you free Grand Marnier floaters.
All right, you heard it here on theborder.com. Check it out.
Grand Marnier.
All right, guys, thanks for listening to this movies, films, and flicks special Alien Retrospective. That's a good title for this podcast, right?
I was going to say Resurrection, but Retrospective works, I guess.
I'm just not good at this. All right. Thank you so much.
Tune in next week when we cover the Mummy series, which features a sequel, another sequel, and then a prequel, which has a sequel, which then has two prequels.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Should I keep track of that?
Yeah.
I've been your host, John. For my co-hosts, Mark and Robert, we'll see you guys next time.
Peace.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.